go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Never ceases to amaze me how quickly we get through any given week. This is simply amazing. It is the second day of July 2015. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. And it is the fourth day of our very challenging week at the Horn, occasioned by the fact that I'm going to be away from the microphone for 5 days next week, or some portion of 5 days, as noted. I'm going to D.C. in an effort to, work on the ACAC, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. We're going to make a big push to try to get it introduced in the Senate of the United States. And that means, since we're going to be staying in a kind of a dodgy motel, I mean, we want to talk about grassroots. This is grassroots. About 50 miles outside of D.C., that means getting back in time to get on the air is sort of a dicey proposition. And with that in mind, that means, well, at least some of those days, we're not going to be back in time to get on the air. I don't know if it's going to be 5 days. I'll try to get a couple of shows in if I can. I'm taking the rig with me. But it is what it is. And so, consequently, we had to do 2 weeks' worth of fundraising in 1 week. And thus far, we have had an amazing degree of success. Thanks to Barbie and Chris, we made our fundraising goal Monday. We made the fundraising goal Tuesday, thanks to Chris. Last night, thanks to Shirley in Wisconsin, with Shirley's First of the Month Wisconsin Challenge, we made the goal again, and we have very nearly made the goal again this evening, thanks to another $100 challenge by Chris. So that is really quite stirring, and we've got about $100 to go this evening to finish up the fundraising for this Thursday. And thank you very kindly to Chris in Germany for providing these challenges through the week, as well as to Barbie and to Thomas Jug of Punch and to Shirley in Wisconsin and to Jay Cruzen, who sweetened the pot last night considerably. And here's how. Jay Cruzen has told me, until he says to turn the spigot off, that every person contributing $100 or more to the Horn will be provided with a Bernie 2016 t-shirt. Really? I mean, that's incredibly generous on Jay Cruzen's part, and a great way to help out Bernie and help us as we try to finish up the week to the good. So here's how that works. If you would like to have, and many of you have already taken advantage of this, it is made in the United States, the T-shirt. It is union-made in the United States, the T-shirt is. So here's how it works. The T-shirt's coming either blue or white. So if you want one, you need to contribute $100 to the Horn, and you need to let me know via email the mailing address where you want it shipped and the size you need the T-shirt in and your choice of blue or white. And with just one more T-shirt, we will have absolutely fulfilled the challenge and the fundraising goal for this evening, and we can even go forward getting started on tomorrow evening, which brings me to another... Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, which brings me to another point. Tomorrow evening. I got a note last night from Sparky. Sparky, of course, being the longtime moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, which is the means we use to bring about the magic of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is Friday on the front porch.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Sparky let me know last night that apparently our dear friend Mike Malloy and his lovely partner in life and spouse and mother of the amazing Molly, Kathy, they're not going to be on the air tomorrow evening from 9 to midnight Eastern Time, which is, of course, 6 to 9 Pacific. And consequently, it seems like a lovely opportunity to have yet another of our and we do this every now and then. I figure it's kind of a service to the truth seekers as well. We will have an epic Friday on the front porch to provide, you know, a homey place for the truth seekers if they want to wander over. So by all means, let the truth seekers know that there will be an epic Friday on the front porch tomorrow. And so we'll get started about 6 p.m. Eastern Time, as usual, and then we will continue well after the 9 o'clock cutoff end time for the program, as usual, and probably go up to around 11, or heck, if the conversation is really rousing, we'll go to midnight. Okay. So tell your friends and neighbors and put out the clock and wind the cat. We're going to have an epic Friday on the front porch tomorrow. And thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont, letting me know loud and clear on TuneIn. Much obliged. Now, of course, if you want to order the... if you want to take advantage of Jay Cruzen's generous T-shirt offer, you need to go to headonradionetwork.com and click the tab called Contribute. That's the PayPal interface. And you can ignore the questions there about your Uncle Aloysius's trust size. Just put in enough information to get to the next screen. And then you can do all your PayPal stuff, credit cards, PayPal balance, what have you. And that doesn't—that's not just for people who want the T-shirt. That's for anybody who wants to help keep this effort going into the middle of July. Because, well, there's never there. You know, I mean, you know the reality of this program. We're not out there trying to raise $100,000 by the end of the month. No. And we're not like some text-only sites that apparently need to raise $75,000 to get through March. Try to raise $200 an evening. Because we hang on from one day to the next. If you prefer to use the United States Postal Service, and many of you do, some of you do, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801, with the gentle reminder that all checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn and not to Bob Kincaid, as I never see it, I never go to the mailbox, that's all stuff that Boss Man Wayne does. Okay? Cool. So that takes care of all of that. It is, of course, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Thorn in the Side Thursday is dedicated to the attempts, shall we say, at right-wing thinking that really, really make us just kind of, ow, you know, like reaching and grabbing hold of a bunch of, you know, well, the blackberries and the raspberries, the wild blackberries and raspberries will be coming ripe here soon in the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicol, Virginia. If you go blackberry picking anywhere near a mountaintop removal site, you are, of course, fool! Because those things are covered in toxic blasting dust, which are not at all good for you. But anyway, they'll be coming ripe soon, and of course there's nothing more thorny than a blackberry bramble. It'll take the skin right off of you if the copperheads don't get you first. Or the bears. The bears will go for miles, it seems like, when the berries come ripe. But it is. Thorn in the Side Thursday is like reaching down after those most succulent little blackberries and just wow, 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 wow. And you kind of wish you had the hide of a bear because it would make getting to those berries ever so much easier. That's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And in many ways, social media provides a rich, rich harvesting ground for right-wing thought. And I have to share this one with you first. Carol Baker alerted me to this. It apparently went viral. These are the words of one Becky Wegner Rommel. And I don't see anything unfair about sharing this with you because Becky Wegner Rommel of Talibandiana put this out there for the public to see and to hear, which you're gonna. All we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it. Oh, yeah, by the way, for the folks already in the chat room this evening, good evening to Anatole and Jug of Punch and Texas Tea and Tim from L.A. and all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. Good evening. If you'd like to jump in, you are more than welcome. We have a rollicking good time in there. Lots of fun. And, yes, indeed. Happy Thorns Day. Get it, Thorns Day? Get it, Thorn in the Side? Right. But when you... when you put stuff out there without thinking, or... No, actually, this isn't without thinking. This woman is doing her dead-level best to think. It's just kind of a... what was the term they used? If you Googled it during the reign of error of Dim Leader, it would pop up George Bush immediately. Oh, yeah, miserable failure. This woman's trying to think, but she's a miserable failure. And you run across a lot of this when you run across right-wingers, white-wingers on the social media and out on the interweb tubes generally. I'm not sure if it's a plus or a minus to the proliferation of mobile devices that they, it used to be a real pain in the ass. You know, you wanted to shoot a video, you had to shoot the video, you had to process the video, you had to upload the video. Now it all can just happen from the little miracle that is the massively powerful computer that you carry around in your pocket, regardless of platform or regardless of manufacturer. They're all powerful, and they all do a pretty passing fair job. they did a great job for Becky Wegner Rommel. No, really, Rommel. Somewhere in Germany, the family is grieving. Erwin Rommel, the Desert Fox, was a genius of a tactician during the Second World War. Apparently, there has been a winnowing of the brain power in that family name. You may recall that Erwin Rommel was compelled to commit suicide because he participated in the attempt to assassinate the little guy with the Charlie Chaplin mustache.
Nobody.
I don't care if you had 616. You don't win. But here we go. Get the hockey puck. Make a couple of passes with the duct tape. Because this is you'll bother the neighbors at dinner time if you don't. No, but what I was going to say before we go into this, if you go and you see right wingers blathering about on the interweb tubes on social media, one of the things that sets them apart from progressives and liberals such as we are is that our side is kind of famous for doing our own thinking. I mean, the GOP, in fairly short order, will be painting Hillary Rodham Clinton, Secretary Senator Clinton, as the most liberal human being ever to be born upon the planet Earth, the Antichrist. Bruka, 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 bruka. And the funny thing is that there are progressives out there that are going, yeah, she is the Antichrist. And the right wing goes, yeah, Benghazi, emails. And some on our side will use their little call from there in the duck blind and go, Goldman Sachs, Goldman Sachs. Which is not to say that she is way too cozy with the corporate interests in the United States, but she ain't Ted Cruz. And she ain't Rand Paul out there having a tete-a-tete and a meeting of the mind such as they are with Cloven Bundy. She's not Piyush Jindal. She ain't Chris Christie. Nor Donald Trump. God, how many are there? It's like crabgrass after a spring rain. But anyway, that's kind of beside the point. The point being that we on the so-called left, what left, do our own thinking. And we make our own decisions, and we talk about stuff that matters. But if you see a right-winger nine times out of ten, they're regurgitating something they've heard on Fox or from Flush Flembaugh or Hannity or some preacher in their pulpit. 19? There are 19 denizens of Bedlam running the clown trail off the rails now. I can't name them. Oh, God, I forgot Lindsey Graham of Smolder and Chode. Jebby. In the next couple of weeks or so, we will finally get Scott Walker. So that'll make 20. Makes a fella's head hurt. But when you see a right-winger blathering along, They're like it's like the reverse feeding of a baby bird. Oh, here we go at dinner time again, just kind of and they regurgitate back things that they have been told to think and told to say. And nah, not so much told to think as told to believe. And this is a classic case in point. It's also funny that if you confront them and you say, well, because I've seen this a million times, but I've seen it once. Well, there you go, repeating your Fox talking points. Well, I don't know anything about this Fox of which you talk. What is this Fox? I don't watch Hannity every night. No, well, of course not. Not every night. I'm not part of the Tea Party. I live in South Carolina, but I don't know what this Tea Party is of which you speak. What is this Tea Party? God, I remember when we thought we had a handful of weirdo right-wingers when we referred to them as the Seven Dwarves. What do you get 20 or 21 of? But they'll always deny that they're simply regurgitating stuff. But what you're about to hear is a straight-up regurgitation. But it is done with real emotional panache. Real aplomb. A certain je ne sais wingnut, if I may. And so, with your hands strapped to the seats, and the hockey puck, you got a real good bite on the hockey puck. The social media stylings of Becky Wegner Rommel.
It's a really sad day for me today, and it's a very sad day for a lot of Christ followers, because today our government decided that everything that God created his church to be, as man, as woman, Adam and Eve.
Not Adam and Steve. Sorry, Steve.
Five justices decided that God was wrong.
Now, where could she possibly have gotten that idea? Because you don't just wake up in the morning and look at the news and find out that marriage equality is the law of the land and say, well, five justices decided God was wrong. Who's been blathering that bullshit? Why, look, just last night, Pastor Hagee, or Pastor Brother Governor Minister Presidential Candidate Diabetes Salesman, Diabetes Snake Oil Salesman Mike Huckstaby, or Franklin Graham, or Todd Starnes, or, and it goes on and on and on. And you'd like to make the, it would be cute to make the argument, well, looks like Granny's off her meds. But she's not. She's just fine. This is just another day for her of tidying up the house there. But the poor dumb thing can't think for herself. All she can do is take what her hate-filled pastor says on Sunday and try to earn some, I don't know, brown, right-wing brownie points by putting it out there to her friends on Facebook. Now, both Huffington Post and Queerty picked this up, and kudos to them. How do they find this stuff? How do they sort the wheat from the chaff when right-wing Facebook posts are just with this stuff?
Five unelected judges in black robes.
When, of course, there's nothing in the Constitution that says they're supposed to be elected. although now some right-wingers have decided what they want is judicial retention elections. And who knows, maybe they'll sell the people on that notion. Maybe we, the people of the United States, trying to form that more perfect union and having pretty well given up. I mean, look, we cut food stamps for hungry people, right? Maybe we'll buy into that. Even though the right wing has this outfit called the Federalist Society, and we've got these things called the Federalist Papers, and in the Federalist Papers, I can't do what Dr. Bill does and just cite chapter and verse of them, but I know, having read them, that they actually talk about why they set up the Supreme Court, Article 3 of the Constitution, the way they do. They talk about why judges should not be elected. They talk about wanting them not to have political pressures. Naturally, our political system has turned that on its head. And you can't get, if, God forbid, we should need to replace one of the sane members of the sane wing of the Supreme Court, it couldn't happen right now, because the Senate of the United States would not accord that much deference to the President of the United States to confirm one of his nominees, because they are engaged in an insurrection against America, the Congress of the United States is. And that goes double if, for some reason, God should call home, say, Uncle Nino or Slappy Coke Can Thomas, or shoot him in the back of the head, Gomez Alito, or John Roberts, or that Kennedy kid who's always seeking attention. But as Boz Skaggs said, there's a breakdown dead ahead. And enough vamping, let's get to it.
Government decided that everything that God created his church to be, as man, as woman, Adam and Eve, five justices decided that God was wrong.
She's going to cry.
And now is the time that Christians have a voice. You know, I hear a lot of people say, you know, you Christians, you know, you're not into the times. You're not into times. You know, you got to get, it's 2015.
Yeah, the Christians aren't into times. The Christians are into addition and subtraction, and certainly no multiplication or division. And you can forget about sine and cosine and all that stuff. No, the Christians aren't into times.
God did not change. His word is truth. Your word isn't truth. My word isn't truth. God's word is truth. And God says that marriage is between a man and a woman.
Only it's not in there.
I don't care if you think I'm judging you. The fact is, the God of the universe, he is the truth. Jesus Christ, not Muhammad.
Not Muhammad. By the way, I gotta give a real shout out to the folks at Apple, because she's using her little plug-in headphone microphones, and this thing is just, I mean, this is some crystal clear audio. I mean, wow. She'll probably have her own program over on the American Family Association Radio of Tupelo, Mississippi, Stan. If I was Brian Fisher, I'd be worrying about my job.
Okay? It's just like these Islamic extremists. Okay? They're not just extremists. They're Islamic. President Obama, Islamic.
You got that? Islamic! There's more to this than just, okay, a goofy lady out in Talibandiana in the heartland of America. Ain't that America? Land of the free. Ain't that America? for you and me. Little pink houses, right? There's more to it than this. This woman is a poster child of sorts. There are millions of her. If you live in the United States of America, you don't know. You might be standing behind her in the grocery store when she starts hooting about Islamic President Obama. Because, see, they don't have filters, and they feel no compunction about keeping their opinions to themselves. And here's the bonus. You never know when one of these yo-yos that's hooting about religion and God's love and everything, you never know when they're all good and gunned up because they were too much of a chicken shit coward to go to the grocery store for a loaf of Wonder Bread and a jug of milk without carrying a piece. Nah, you don't get out of it that easily, Jeremy. Jeremy in Vermont says, Bob, she just admitted her word's not truth. She needs to be played no more. Nah, sorry, this is too good.
Extremists.
Islamic extremists. I mean, what's the answer here? Was this good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian evangelical fundamentalist? Was she into the old Panther and a little of her coffee in the morning? I don't know.
President Obama, Islamic extremists. I am so sick of people being lukewarm. Are you serious? All these people saying they're Christians and are on the Facebook going, yay, I'm so proud of those justices. Are you a Christian?
No, lady, you are, and that's why we're not. But that I'm so tired of people being lukewarm. The only time you hear about lukewarm Christians is when you're attending some evangelical fundamentalist revival. And they'll tell you about, be thou not lukewarm. I would that ye were hot or cold, but not lukewarm, and I shall spit thee out of my mouth. I mean, there's an actual pedigree to this stuff.
Oh, my gosh, do you read the same Bible I read?
No, not really. Because the Bible you read, lady, you don't even understand. You don't understand it in English, let alone the actual meaning of the original languages from whence it comes. But I feel like Napoleon Chagnon, the first time he peered through the jungle leaves at the Yanomamo people in Venezuela. I mean, I'm looking at a different way, in a very frightening way. Of being human. Be very careful, be very still. Don't upset them, they can become very violent very quickly. They may look peaceful, but they can turn on you in a trice.
Okay, all I want to know is truth. I don't care what you think. I don't care what you think about my opinion. Because you know what? I could really care less.
Oh, the trifecta, she could care less. That means she cares. Aw, Becky Rommel cares. Becky Rommel gave Dobby socks.
I don't care if you're my Facebook friend, but Christians... are little Christ. Those are people that follow Christ.
Did you know that? Christians are little Christs. I mean, Christ was about probably no more than 5'3", 5'4", but Christians are little Christs. I mean, they're like dashboard Jesus. Oh, dear.
That means we believe that when babies are born, when they're conceived, it said, Jesus said, I knew you before you were conceived. That means that they are not to be aborted, okay?
Okay. I mean, this is what she sounds like when she cares. Maybe she'd be calmer if she cared, if she couldn't care less. I can't sort it out.
It means a man and a wife are to be married, okay?
Okay. Down to the courthouse by the justice of the peace? And does he have to say Jesus during the ceremony? Because I don't know. What if they're married by a rabbi? Or an imam? Or a Zen monk? What if the marriage ceremony takes place in an indigenous setting, and the ancestors are called upon to witness the union? Is it still a wedding, Mrs. Rommel?
That's what God said.
Well,
I'll tell you what God said. Now, if you don't want to like me,
she's waving bye bye at us. She waved bye bye at us, but we're not going to be so mean as to walk out in mid histrionic. Brother Deacon Asa up in Canada says, I ain't buying it. Much as I tried, she's just doing this for the 15 seconds of fame. No. There is not. Meryl Streep. I'm trying to think of, who's the magnificent, British actress who played the Queen. She couldn't do this. You can't act this. It couldn't be done with Stanislavski's method, and it couldn't be done with all the rigorous technical training that the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts has to offer. This is real. This is real America. Here, let's put it in context. This is the 20, 25, 30-year spouse of one of those gun-fondling truck drivers that John told us about last night. And under ordinary circumstances, they lead ordinary American lives. But if one little thing goes sideways for them, their persecution complex kicks in. And then it's all psychotic hands on deck. That's not fair. I apologize. But this woman goes to church every Sunday. I'll betcha. Although that's another thing you see out there. People who haven't darkened the doorway of a church in years are suddenly under attack for their beliefs and values because a couple of guys can pick out a China pattern. They're okay. Sorta. They live in this... In this tenuous equilibrium that is upset any time the pastor tells them that they have not gotten their way. This week it's marriage equality. Gay marriage! Remember Todd Starnes, where the president's going to be attacked by cicadas and bumblebees. But you can tell that she's had a really solid schooling, because she started out at gay marriage, and it took her that long before she was on to the Islamic extreme lists. As Irish Dave notes, extremeless, the drought has spread. Oh, no. I'm sorry, Ron and Raleigh. quoting Monty Python again. Skip a bit, brother. We're almost done.
But I'm telling you what the God of Abraham, Jacob, has said. And he said that because of your sinfulness, he came.
You were so sinful, he came. It always works out that way, doesn't it?
To die on a cross because of you, the very people that are just like spitting him in his face right now.
See, I haven't seen anybody spit. Well, one, Jesus would have to be here to have anybody spit in his face. And the first people to spit in his face would, of course, be people like Becky Wegner Rommel, who would see nothing but a dirty Palestinian possible terrorist. Yeah, I mean, what? Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, would be here for what, 15 seconds before he's... Dad, really? No. Beam me back up. Send the General Lee back down, Dad. I'm not staying. You made me do it last time. Oh, yeah, I fell for it last time. Oh, fool me once, Dad. Shame on you. Dad? While the Christians gathered together, hollering, crucify him.
Him in his face right now. He loved you so much that he died the sinner's death. Now someone's got to pay for our sin. He did it on the cross for you.
See, you can tell she's been paying attention. Okay, so maybe she didn't make it to church. She's certainly been watching, the Eternal Word Television Network or TBN or any of those other channels you have to pay for if you want to be able to watch a goddamn baseball game once in a while. She's been paying attention because she died for you. Really? I didn't ask him to. Did you? No? I mean, I'm trying to think what Agnes ever do that deserves for a guy to be brutally tortured, having nails driven through his flesh and hung and set up to just pass away in agony on a crossbeam on a hill in a godforsaken hunk of the world called Palestine. Huh? I mean, I've been with Agnes for more than 20 years now. I haven't seen anything worth doing that over. And the fact of the matter is, most of the people alive today haven't done anything worth doing that to somebody over. But if you've got the whole 2,000-year-old Christian punishment fetish going for you, yeah. By the way, Granny Rommel, the preacher's going to see this video, and he's probably going to invite you to come back to his study. Yeah, but see, that's the thing. We's all born sinful because of that vile, nasty, filthy, dirty, sinful Eve out there carrying on a conversation across the clothesline with a gossipy copperhead, a chatty cobra. Yeah.
Now is the day that you accept him as Lord and Savior, and you ask for forgiveness and tell him, Lord, I made a mess of my life, and I need you.
No.
Please, Christians, please make a stand. Make a stand for what you believe in. Don't just sit there and say you don't care. Oh, dear Jesus in heaven, I just pray that these people wake up, Lord, that they see that our nation, the very men that made our Constitution, institution. They were believing. They believed in you as Lord and Savior. These.
No, they didn't. See, this is further proof. This means that she's been probably watching Glenn Beck. I mean, this is, we can really dissect this, because this that whole idea of the founders and framers as Bible-believing, upstanding, God-fearing Christians with a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ, that's a bunch of bunk. I mean, it is just historically not factual. But she's heard David Barton talking about it, or she's heard, oh, I don't know, Mark Levin talking about it. And there's been nobody in her life to go, oh, no, see, you're being lied to. You're so interested in truth, Becky, but people are lying to you. Yeah, Ron in Canada noting, so sinful he came, Christ. I didn't even hear him breathing hard.
Men did not expect our country to have this happen. I just pray that you forgive us, Lord. Forgive us. Cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Help us, Lord. Help us, the people that are Christians, help us be strong in the midst of this battle, Lord.
Of course it's a battle. They can't get away from the eliminationist rhetoric. There's a battle going on between the Christians and the people who want to be able to get married, who couldn't care less, note the appropriate usage of that idiom, that chestnut, who couldn't care less about Becky Wegner Rommel.
I just pray this in Jesus' name. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. I love you guys. I know a lot of you don't agree with me, and you don't have to. But I agree with Jesus, and I take his side.
Yeah, that's great, Beck. Except Jesus never said anything about gay people. But nobody's told you that. Apparently, Becky eventually yanked her video off of Facebook, but she also posted her call for American healing to YouTube, and she has thus far forgotten to take that part down. If you want to capture it for future reference, you best do it now. This particular post, updated Indiana woman's Facebook video meltdown rant over marriage goes viral, is from thenewcivilrightsmovement.com. Danny, down in Louisiana, Stan, said, "Hola, Bob. Hola, Danny. I've missed some of the show and missed who this lunatic you're playing is, and can I find a video of it online?" Well, you just heard it right there, thenewcivilrightsmovement.com. It should probably be pretty close to the top of the page. A lot of hits. Danny says, "The saddest aspect of these types of Jeebus freaks is once they, like the John Birchers just a few decades ago, they were dismissed, marginalized as they should be, and correctly called crazy. Today they are a measurable percentage of our population. They are now the Republican Party, and they're given TV and radio shows. For that, I've always blamed St. Ronnie." Well, and you can, Danny, for the at least the part of getting rid of the fairness doctrine. But if you want to talk about the proliferation of right-wing media in the 90s, you have to talk about Bill Clinton signing the Telecommunications Act of 1996 into law. It's just a fact that allowed massive corporations to consolidate their holdings of the public, the licenses to broadcast on the public airwaves of this country. Anyway, Danny says he got in bed with these tragically and terminally mentally ill cases, and now they're just one snake away from needing to be put down like a rabid animal, and most of their leaders are laughing all the way to the bank. Well, that last part is absolutely true. But the other part of this is that to a certain extent, and I don't want to be too hard on us because I kind of nominated us for more on Monday anyway, or at least myself. Our side, for decades, left the field of contest to the right wing. I mean, I go far enough back in radio that, say, in the mid-80s, I can remember when the ABC radio network was still programming some national syndication of people who were reasonably liberal slash progressive. Long before there was ever a Dr. Laura, there was a Dr. Joy Brown, and she was kind of humane, and she tried to give common sense answers to people who would call radio shows for psychological advice, which is a kind of a special demographic all by itself. And they had a very urbane man with a lovely, lovely British accent by the name of Michael Jackson. He was out of Los Angeles, and he was absolutely very much liberal. And then it was all gone. Just poof. I mean, hell, we were running Michael Jackson, talking liberal stuff, and Joy Brown talking liberal stuff on an AM radio station in Tuscumbia, Alabama. Tuscumbia, the little town with scum in the middle. Nah, I love it down there. It's beautiful. Except for the part about being in Alabama. But our side abandoned the medium. I mean, how many years was it that Rush Limbaugh was pretty much nearly the only game in town? Nationally. Oh, you had Larry King at night, but he was actually trying to be a journalist. And with Limbaugh's success came a massive number of wannabes. And I think you can even argue that Limbaugh's success kind of inspired Rupert Murdoch to create the Fox Network, because he realized there were millions of rubes out there that could be fleeced on a daily basis. And people, you know, real companies that were sort of respectable were doing business with Limbaugh. I mean, Bose Wave Radios and Snapple. And our side, whatever power structure there was, said, "Oh no, we wouldn't want to go into that medium. I mean, who wants to? Who listens to radio anymore? Besides, you know, those people." Well, as people like me and Malloy and Rick Smith and Hartman and others can tell you, Norman Goldman and I share, we work the same time slot. And he's got a good-sized audience, we got a good-sized audience. You know, there's a hunger for this kind of programming out there. Mark Thompson, he's still working this slot, isn't he, on Sirius? Malloy is, of course, the dean of all of it. I mean, talking about Malloy, you know, you don't get invited from Atlanta to WLS Chicago simply because... they like the tenor of his voice. He's a profound talent, and he drew audiences. And up until the very moment he left WLS Chicago, he was whipping the daylights out of the entire dial. You match up right wing to progressive and give them stations with the same approximate reach and power. The progressive guy will whip the shit out of the right winger day in and day out. But where terrestrial radio is concerned, it's always the right winger gets the 50,000 watt blowtorch clear channel, and I'm not talking about the brand. I'm talking about what that kind of frequency. While the progressive goes on a 5,000 daytime, 50 watt nighttime flickering candle flame. So Danny, it's not all them. Some of them, this is Pogo. We have met the enemy, and they is us. Yeah. And a t-shirt will be on its way to Bob in Texas. Thank you very kindly, Bob. Couple of notes coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Bob, could you please explain to me how people that believe this crazy shit aren't de facto clinically insane? Well, they might be. I mean, if you take away the religious aspect, Ron, and you sit them down with a licensed therapist, and the licensed therapist says, do you have any invisible friends? Well, if you don't have religion and you say yes, you get medicine. But if you do have religion and you say yes, they call you pious and faithful and a believer. Jack in Shreveport noting, the right wingers always say that people should take personal responsibility, yet say that Jesus died because every single person ever wouldn't take personal responsibility for their sins. I wonder if that ever occurred to Rommel. No, nothing has occurred to Becky Rommel because she is simply a repository for whatever bilge is spewing out of her pastor's mouth or the TV preacher's mouth or Mark Levin or Flush Flimball or Sean Hannity. She does not think for herself. The last thing in the world the right wing wants is for people to run around thinking for themselves, because then the next thing you know, if they've got a conscience and a set of morals, they wind up being progressives, and if they don't, they wind up libertarians. And this, and I take solace in this, a brief note from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan. Subject line, the Jesus loon.
The loons, Henry, the loons.
I think the term, Diane says, I think the term in sociology used to describe this woman's reaction is moral panic. And it may very well be, and it should probably also be a band's name. Imagine multiplying her panic across the population of like-minded loons. Diane says, we are in for a ringside seat to mass hysteria. See, that's the problem. I don't know if we get a ringside seat or if we're going to be in medias res. Because I don't think these people are willing to have their psychotic meltdowns, their fugue states. I don't think they're willing to do that without us. Because one of the key parts of their paranoia is that they're right and we're wrong. And this goes This goes from Dan to Beersheba, Alpha to Omega, in the way they view the world. We don't get a ringside seat, Diane, because they have to have a Judas goat. They have to have somebody that they can point to, because, I mean, this is the entire operative principle behind right-wing preaching, right-wing broadcasting, right-wing politics, right-wing social movements, is that America would be great again if only those people, and you can fill in the blanks, for Donald Trump, for instance, it's Mexicans. For Becky Wegner-Rommel, it is apparently homosexually married Islamists. Islamic! But really, Muslims, gay people, liberals! Remember how in the aftermath of September 11th, 2001, Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson sat down and put their tiny little brains together and came to the conclusion that 9/11 was brought about by lesbians and liberals and the people for the American way? I mean, what's that little game with the fill in the blanks that kids play while they're on vacation and in the back of the car to keep from fighting with each other? Mad Lib, something like that. But it's all the same tune, just different words to the hymn. If it's not homosexuals, you can strike that out and put in immigrants. If it's not immigrants, you can strike that out and put in Confederate flag / heritage. Not that, strike that out, put in Negroes. Not that, strike that out, put in abortion. Strike that out, put in Second Amendment. But they all... they all go with the same tune, and that tune kind of has the a definite Wagnerian flavor. So let's take a break. It's 3 minutes past the hour on this challenging week at the Horn. Remember, the offer is open from Jay Cruzen. Anybody who contributes $100 or more to the Horn gets a Bernie 2016 t-shirt. Let me know by email and give me a mailing address, the size you prefer, and your choice between blue and white, and one will be on the way to you. Now, as for, this is, after all, Conversation Radio, this here Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we got lots more stuff if you don't want to converse. But if you do want to converse, and by the way, we always welcome new callers, first-time callers, because, people do well with their first calls here. I try very hard to put people at ease and make it just feel like an ordinary conversation. There's not going to be any time pressures on you. We're not going to tell you that we have to go to break and to hold that thought. Just dial up. Dial up. Anyway, the numbers are 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, or 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Skype to Skype, of course, is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. If you have never participated that way, just fire up your Skype and send me a contact request, and we'll be conversating before you know what happened. This is listener-supported Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Somehow or another, the drive-by truckers always managed to be relevant. When Walter Went Crazy, that's the name of that tune, from the album English Oceans, which is brilliant from start to finish, like all truckers' albums. This is The Horn. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, the second day of July, 2015. And let's run over to the other line that we used to call the Skype line and talk to Jim. Hey, Jim.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I caught the first part of your program. I was in the kitchen baking, and, you know, you have to watch stuff like that. And I heard the name Rommel mentioned.
Yes.
And I was just wondering about that. And then I think you had some lady that you were playing whose last name was Rommel.
That was Mrs. Rommel.
No relation, I guess.
Oh, somewhere back in time, I'm almost certain they are.
Well,
this would be the Rommels of the von stupid Rommels.
Well, I guess so. I just wanted to mention one thing about Rommel, and I didn't know if you knew this or not, but how Rommel sort of was selected for his timely end by the two generals who came down from Berlin. And back when he first started in North Africa, he had a general under him, or maybe it was wasn't a flag officer. And Rommel had called him a coward. And that guy hated Rommel from that day on. And, of course, when the war started badly and Rommel was taken out of the Africa Corps and was in other places, and, of course, after the attentat against Uncle Adolf at Rastenburg, this guy was in the Army legal personnel section. And he was the one who cast the vote that Rommel should be the one who would have to take the dose.
I did not know that.
Now, Rommel and Hitler had a meeting right after D-Day at a place called Margival near Soissons in France. And Rommel just told Hitler, the war is lost. That's it. And, of course, hearing that from his one-time favorite general, Hitler didn't like to hear it and was screaming about all his wonder weapons and stuff like that. And Rommel just told him, he said, look, I'm not talking from month to month or year to year. We're talking from day to day. And that pissed old Uncle Adolf off. And, you know, but that guy was the one who fingered him when they had the selection as to who was going to bite the bullet, because Rommel had a first cousin named von Hofacker who had written his name down, but had put a big question mark by it as far as to who would be in on the assassination attempt at Rastenburg. But that general was the one on that military board who actively campaigned that Rommel would be the one who would have to be sacrificed. And, of course, they couldn't have Hitler's one-time favorite Panzer general, being...
up against the wall, the firing squad, no.
Exactly. So he was given a choice, either you can either face the People's Court. Now, you know who was in charge of that was a guy named Roland Freisler, who was also an attendee at the Wannsee Conference. And, of course, rather than face the People's Court, if he had chosen that route, his family would be given neither safety nor comfort. And so that's the reason he had to take the long ride. Now, his son, Manfred, was the mayor of Herlingen, Rommel's hometown. And when my dad was mayor, they had correspondence, because there was some type of program between the mayor of my hometown, Camden, South Carolina, and Herlingen. And the letters are now in between my dad and Manfred Rommel. And he was the mayor of Herlingen, as I said before, and they're in the archives. But even though Rommel caused my dad a lot of trouble back during the great WW2, he always had a great deal of respect for him. And I think it's meet and right for a man to be honored and respected by his enemies.
I suppose. I mean, didn't he also advise against the way that the Normandy defenses were set up?
Well, when he was put down there by Hitler, it was supposed to be the so-called Fortress Europe from Denmark to Spain. And, of course, Rommel realized it was totally inadequate, and he had begun to lay all these mines. I mean, like 4 million mines were placed, best he could, because, I mean, the Germans just didn't have the fortifications and the people who were building the fortifications were French slave laborers who certainly made no effort to give the Germans their fair due of work, that's for sure.
Weren't they absolutely convinced that the invasion was coming at the Pas de Calais?
Well, there were certain ones who were, and there were certain ones who weren't, because, I mean, you know, when you're, I guess, a tactician, you've got to count not upon where you think the enemy is coming over the shortest part between the Pas de Calais, but in good weather. But, of course, you know, the Allies had counted on that, so they would come over into Normandy, the furthest point. And, of course, they had a whole false army built up under patents in Kent with rubber tanks and stuff like that.
Right.
But Rommel knew...
For convenient aerial photography.
Right. And, of course, Rommel knew what was going on. And he realized that they would not attack at the most likely place. And they had, I don't know how many Panzer Corps, 6 Panzer Corps and a number of others, that could not be released. And the reason is Hitler and Goebbels had had an old night up at the Berghof at Hitler's retreat, thinking about old times, and Uncle Adolf had taken a sleeping pill. And
was not to be awakened.
Yeah, and Rommel's boss, von Rundstedt, you know, had called the Berghof and tried to tell him. They said, oh, no, the Fuhrer can't be awakened. He's taking a sleeping pill. And Rommel had said this, if we don't get them right there when they come in,
we won't stop them. Right.
That's right, exactly. But he was a worthy advocate
I love that, whether it's true or not. I love that scene from Patton where George C. Scott sees his Panzer Corps coming up, and he says, Rommel, you magnificent bastard, I read your book!
Well, Rommel was an advocate of armored warfare, and he was at one time Hitler's favorite general. He participated in the Polish campaign, and he participated in a number of things, and of course when Mussolini got his ass handed to him by the British in North Africa, Hitler sent Rommel down there with the Africa Corps, and they fought magnificently. And, you know, Rommel was, he tried to fight that war in North Africa in a knightly fashion as best he could.
Well, he was part of the Prussian elite, was he not?
Exactly. Well, no, he really wasn't. His father was a schoolmaster.
That's right. He didn't have the fawn in front of his name, or did he?
No, he didn't. And he allegedly had an illegitimate child by another woman whom he supported, and he was married to Lucy Rommel, and that was the mother of Manfred Rommel, the one I just mentioned. But I just mentioned his name because even Winston Churchill, in the House of Commons, referred very favorably to him as being such a worthy enemy. And as a matter of fact, there was such a mystique grew out around Rommel that the British were scared of him.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when they had to send Montgomery in there to try to dispel among the British officer corps that this man was not, you know, some type of immortal Valkyrie who had come down and who could not be defeated. But what defeated Rommel was the fact that his supply lines were cut and they couldn't feed their army. They couldn't fuel their army. And of course, you know,
well, the irony of this woman in Taliban, Deanna, being named Rommel.
What was she up to?
Oh, she's like so many people, she has believed what her preachers and the right wing broadcasters and whatnot have been spewing for the last few weeks, and she's declared that God's church is under attack, and the whole incomprehensible screed was about it included the obligatory reference to our founding fathers who had a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ and all of that. But so when I saw her name, I just kind of went, really?
I'll agree with you one thing.
The poor if there's a hereafter, wherever he may be, the poor general is slapping his own head.
Probably so.
But there's a larger truth in it, Jim, and the only reason I share these things is because these are signal beacon exemplars of what really is going down in America. As I noted during the filibuster, this is one version of something that John out on the road was talking about last night when he talked about all of those truckers at Trucker Church who were listening to the preaching about the homosexual marriage and the assault on our Constitution by 5 unelected judges. And all those truckers are sitting there, as John described it, sitting there in their trucker church, and they're actively fondling their sidearms.
I think there's going to be a lot of pushback against that. That's for sure. It's far from being one and over, and as far as giving these couples the actual rights. I mean, in how many 32 states can they not really obey the
It's the law of the land now, and it will eventually be enforced one way or the other. I know that there's a possibility of some county clerks, for instance, being faced with daily fines or hailed into court on contempt or charged in the case. I think I read about this coming out of Kentucky. In Kentucky, they can be charged with a misdemeanor count of misconduct in office, and so eventually that will work itself out. That's not so much what I'm worried about. It is the response of these incredibly inflamed, ignorant people, most of whom, Jim, have guns.
Well, I don't doubt it. Of course they do. I mean, that's the type of they seem to think that's a means of conflict resolution, and that's...
The problem, Jim, is that they think that they are being put upon because they participate in this evangelical fundamentalist Christianity that tells them that they are always a victim. Now, never mind the fact that they go to churches in buildings that cost millions upon millions of dollars to build, that have balconies that are raked and look like an interior version of a Greek amphitheater. Never mind the fact that their ministers are millionaires. Never mind the fact that no one is putting bars on the doors or has any intention of doing it. Never mind the fact that their paranoid ravings are exactly and only that. They have a faith system that tells them they must always be the victim.
I think Joel Osteen had some pushback earlier this week on that.
Yeah, he's got gunned up armed guards, and if you try to stand up and talk back to Joel Osteen, you will have a gun at your head before you can say bless God.
Well, that's just something that's totally alien to me. I just don't understand that. But
well, it may be alien to you, Jim.
It is.
But it is real. And it is
more,
I
don't doubt it.
It's more real than you may even... it's frightening to contemplate how real it is.
Well, I mean, look at how many black churches have been burned. I mean, now, they said one was burned by the Klan in South Carolina, but I think that was a lightning strike. But I think a number of churches throughout history have been burned. And, you know, I just don't understand how any type of Christian could burn a church or even burn a church when people were still inside. I just don't understand that. I mean, to me, that would be the ultimate sacrilege, the ultimate, you know, thing that would really put you within the realm of evil to do something like that. I mean, to burn a church? Why?
Because
I've never understood that.
Well, let's put paid to that not understanding, and I'll make it abundantly clear. In the black community, where property ownership has historically been low and discouraged and made anywhere from difficult to impossible, the community would pour all of its best hopes into its church, whether it's Mother Emanuel AME in Charleston, which was burnt to the ground by white Christians, rather than see the black population have a meeting place. These communities have built these churches not merely as houses of worship. I mean, they are houses of worship, but they also, by dint of the of what is often the poverty of the overall community, have served as meeting places. They have served as the organizing center of the community. They've served as the activism center of the community. They've, births, christenings, deaths, funerals, burials, dinner on the ground, celebrations of matrimony. Everything in the community takes place at that church. And in point of fact, white supremacists also understand that the black church, be it Baptist or AME or what have you, Apostolic Holiness, these churches have served as the birthing centers for the demands for equality and civil rights. So the thinking, such as it is behind in a white supremacist's mind, is that if you burn the church, you can somehow stop the organizing, because fear and terror campaigns have ever been the tool of the white majority in its intimidation campaign against a black minority.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I just don't understand any type of mentality or mindset that would destroy what for these people is a house of God. And that's just my point there.
Well, they don't care, Jim.
Well, I think they're going to have some reckonings later on themselves. And, you know, that's just something that's just totally beyond any ability that I have to, you know.
I mean, how else do you bomb a Baptist church with little girls in it?
I know. Those little girls who were practicing for the choir weren't, right?
Yeah.
No.
And not to diminish what has been done to the black church, but where the violent right wing is concerned, it expands. Remember, after months and in fact years of Bill O'Reilly referring to Dr. Tiller as Tiller the Killer, Dr. Tiller was assassinated in his church by a man with a rifle and a scope. The Unitarian Universalist Congregation in East Tennessee was invaded by a man with a shotgun bent on dealing out righteous retribution against liberals because he had read that they were destroying America in books by Michael Savage and Bill O'Reilly and radio broadcasts by Rush Limbaugh and as well as a book called The Liberals Ruining America or something by a guy named Bernie Goldberg. You know, all these people have the blood of innocence on their hands.
Goldberg was a radio guy.
No, Bernie Goldberg was once upon a time a respected journalist for CBS News, but he went off the rails and I don't know, the spirochetes got through his brain, and the next thing you know, he was hollering about liberals ruining America.
Oh, I'm sorry. The name sounded to me. There was another guy named Bernie, I think, who was a radio personality who was gunned down in the parking lot of the radio station.
Oh, no. That was out in Denver, and that was, and I can't remember his name.
It just came But
again, he was gunned down by right-wingers and, in fact, white supremacists.
I just don't understand the mentality of people like that who can exalt themselves into such a position of judgment. And that's my point there.
Well, that's one of the, I suppose there are ennobling features to religion, but it also has its violent and bloodthirsty side.
Well,
and when it goes bad, it goes really, really bad, really fast.
Well, history will bear that out. And listen, thank you for taking my call. I know you've got other people who'd like to talk to you, okay?
Well, indeed, and thank you, Jim. It's good to hear from you. I hope you're well, and whatever was in the oven, I hope came out nicely.
It did, perfectly, exactly. And Rufus is trying to get in there to see what's going on.
Well, I'm glad Rufus feels good enough to feel curious about it.
And YOC, me too.
It's been
kind of icy. Well, listen, take care.
All right, have a good evening. Bye now.
Good night.
Our buddy Jim, not too awfully far from here, over toward Beckley Way. Meanwhile, down in Louisiana, Stan, there's another Jim, and he awaits. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob?
I don't know it. How about you?
Oh, that doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, just look at the history of I kind of take the opposite view of Jimism. I mean, that's basically what the religion, one side of, you know, basically starts out with one guy, and once he's dead, then you got the two factions, he's from either side. And, you know, I'm just like the Muslims with the Sunni and the other side, and that friend of ours, they'd be all the way out of town, and Christianity would be Protestant, you'd be coming with a Protestant church in the 16th century, whatever it was, and that means that, you know, during the 100-year war, and all that kind of stuff, so that's just kind of, things are kind of calm down now, but, you know, because basically power. That's my, it's just, did you get my
sent you that money? Yes, I got it, and I sent you an email. I need you to send me back your mailing address and your size and shirt color preference.
Okay, good. Once I heard that, I should be in there. I got to do it. And my last night show, who was it last night on the show? Two callers, they were great. The trucker, I mean, he.
Oh, John, yeah.
John is like spot on. I mean, you know, I can see that. It's kind of like that here in Louisiana, Stan. I might have to be careful with the bunch. Then we'll wear probably whatever happens, whatever happens. But, yeah, it's like that. Yeah. You know, it's not spoken, but, you know, there's, I'm sure it's kind of like what you told me a while back, you know, in West Virginia, New York, in areas like that, right?
Oh, absolutely. All I got to do is put on my Stop Mountaintop Removal T-shirt, and somebody's going, "Why don't you freeze to death in the dark?"
Then you can't even try to explain to them that there's other ways, and how we're really being screwed over by the 1%. I mean, that's, you know, that talk, they just don't grasp. They just think they got their little niche and they got a small sliver of pie, but they don't want to, they like a big one, but they don't want to get one because I guess they don't think they deserve one, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I can go get into Protestantism, but, you know, with Martin Luther, Calvinism. I mean, he came up with that's fake idea, but if you were born in quote unquote bad circumstances, that's because you were initially bad, right? So
right. If God loves you, he'll manifest that by making you wealthy. That's Calvinism.
And I imagine if they had, in Buddhism it wasn't so, it was karma. If you were born with this karma from a past lifetime, kind of made a little bit more sense, but I mean, how do you know what you did in your past life? So, you know, because I mean, like, whatever circumstances you were born into, once you correct the idiot, you're on the right path, and better lifetime after better lifetime, and you'll potentially be a bodhisattva than you'd be a Buddha to one day. And from what I understand, even the Buddha, when he, the historical Buddha, the Dhamma, I'm pronouncing it right.
Yeah.
He didn't want, he did not want, sex to break out or, am I right? But boy, do you understand?
Yeah.
But that seems to be the natural way. It's all power. It always is being power, even something. And Buddhism can be pretty cool, pretty benevolent. What happened 6-8 months ago, I heard on the Lord's show, where they were killing Muslims somewhere in Asia somewhere because they weren't Buddhist. You know, but then they were probably doing something else to, antagonize them. That's what they thought, you know. That's why I don't think even once I won the lottery, I don't think I'll be going to the Middle East for anything.
Nah, no.
Pyramids would be nice to see, but, nothing else, but, yeah, it's just, and like I said, I was saying, I go to my little family, and eat people at work. I got one guy I can kind of talk to, he definitely sees my point. He understands. But, he even realizes that down here, it's pretty hard to change things because it's so ingrained. And that's the way it is because that's the way it is. You know, and I find that's making kind of hard to believe because, we wouldn't have, if you go with that broad line of thinking, that's almost like, the Quakers who don't use machines. They just use horses.
No, that's the Amish.
The Amish, yeah.
Yeah.
Or the ones who don't use medicine.
Christian Scientists.
Yeah, they all have their own little quirky,
And then there's the Seventh Day Adventurers, and they don't go to church on Sunday.
They had to be different.
Well, no, they actually think that the Sabbath is the last day of the week.
Which
Sunday
is
the first day of the week.
So
actually, there's Seventh Day Adventists. I call them adventurers. I think it's more fun that way. It makes the religion sound more exciting now, doesn't it?
It does. You're on the edge of the seat, on my seat. I'm on the back porch instead of the front porch right now. And going back to work tomorrow, I'm going to head off today. But, the other weird thing is, being on disability, you're only allowed to make so much money. That's one of the reasons why I just realized that Denver was a little bit too expensive with the cost of living being a little bit higher like that. Maybe if I had more time and planned it better, maybe I could have worked it out. I just found the rent's outrageous, for me. I don't have that Bob Kincaid of my lawn money, barrels of cash.
Right, yeah. Well, print and press in the basement.
But,
I mean, every now and then one will smudge, but that happens.
Yeah. But also, I heard a little. Ernie's getting me excited, man.
Didn't he just draw 10,000 people in Wisconsin?
Yeah. And it's weird. I was watching some of the corporate news, the quote unquote liberal channel. MSNBC, and of course, they had one person said, well, he's doing pretty good, but he's got to do better, and he does have to do better. But I think Bernie's got him scared. And of course, I was listening to a little bit of Tom Hartman today. He was just know, yeah, I just can't get enough laughs. I'm just not sore enough left. But, you know, it makes me hopeful, you know. But it's something like Malloy said, he's, you know, the bucket starts really, pulling some boats and stuff, you know. He's gotta be carried, gotta have some good, security people, you know. I don't like to think negative, but just because you don't think negative doesn't mean they're not parties out there or powers that be. That, I don't think they want to see him elected.
Each bill. Go ahead.
And the thing is, when you say this, the thing is, you have to have almost a real groundswell and also get stick, you know, take in some senator, get some like-minded senators, if that's possible. Or maybe you think the Democrats would just come along if they came in on its coattails and in the House. I mean, I don't know if they could take both the House and the Senate.
I don't see it.
I mean, it would have to be.
Good God, look at the other side of the spectrum right now, Jim. The number two guy in polling on the Republicans, you know, granted, it's become a clown train. But number two is Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, if that won't get out the rot gut and swirly straw, nothing will. But again, if you think back to 2012, I can remember when Herb Cain 999 was the front runner. I remember when 1L Michelle batshit crazy Bachman was the front runner.
Oh yeah, well it doesn't.
It's all about the Republican Party knowing who their nominee is going to wind up being probably. And going, no, really, and trying just to stay away from the arranged marriage, if you will, for as long as possible. Oh, not Jeb, not Jeb, not Jeb, not Jeb. Please, I mean, no, Trump, really, seriously. Rand Paul, Ted Cruz? Sure. Not Jeb.
Bob, you pointed out what I was going to say. I can't think of that. It's not one of those characters, crazy clown car that I could go for. I mean, if Hillary gets the nomination, which she probably will, I hope she doesn't, I'll send my birdie. Everything can work out, you know. I think 8 years of Bernie, that would be great, but and then maybe Bernie can pull her over a little bit to the left, but even then, I don't think it would last that long. I mean, maybe it's just my cynical, but I...
Well, I saw something pointed out in a Salon article from a few days ago, and I can't... Yeah, I don't know if it was deliberate, but over there on MSNBC in that morning program where an ostensibly liberal network gives over... it gives over 3 hours of its most prime real estate to an unreconstructed Newt Gingrich Contract on America right winger. They had Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri, who's a Democrat the way Joe Manchin is a Democrat, right?
Right.
And they asked her what her problem was. Or, you know, because, like, it was 2 years ago when she announced that she would, by God, support Hillary Clinton for president. So, naturally, they had to have her on. And what happened? Well, one of the first questions is, well, what's wrong with Bernie? Bernie's getting big crowds. What was her response?
Well, extremists always get big crowds. I mean, look. Ron Paul got big crowds.
Sort of damning with faint praise there. But you got to remember the primary strategy for Hillary Clinton is to not spend money.
Keep her powder dry.
Every dollar Hillary doesn't spend in the primary process is money that that she's going to spend in the general against whichever right wing proto fascist the RNC nominates. And right now, my money is still on either Jeb or Scott Walker.
So
look for more of that. Who was the Illinois congressman who said, well, I don't even know if Bernie likes immigrants. And this was 2 or 3 weeks ago when, of course, it might be well remembered, especially among us, that, well, you know, Bernie's dad immigrated from Poland and a whole bunch of Bernie's family died in the Holocaust. So you've got this guy in Illinois. I don't know if he likes immigrants. And it's just right now it's just damning with faint praise. If he really begins to surge in the polls, then the long knives will come out.
I got like 2 or 3 years on you, so I've seen it before. That's, you know, I still hope. I haven't felt this hopeful about a presidential candidate in a long time. I mean, since I was a kid.
I haven't had a presidential candidate since I was very, if ever. I haven't had a presidential candidate who was really, really getting people excited, who was such a match with my own politics, which is a match with the politics that wants to see America great again, not just talk about America being great again, and wants to do the budget stuff to make America great again. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Now, here's one for your consideration, Jim. Just today, we got another Democratic presidential candidate.
I heard that. Who was it?
Jim Webb.
Oh, yeah.
And Jim Webb is there as a Southern stalking horse. Now, this is the same Jim Webb whose words we featured here, what, a week and a half ago, who said that the Confederate flag is badly misunderstood by most of America.
Yeah, I kind of get him running at all. I don't see him getting away with any of the Democrats about that day. I mean, at best, he might be able to try to take something away from the Republicans, but it's like you're saying this. If you're a Democrat running as a Republican, the Republican's going to beat you every time, or 9 times out of 10. Right? I mean, it's not one of the things that hurt Mary Landrieu on this, or another thing was.
Well, what Jim Webb will do is he'll cruise along, he won't raise much money, but he'll work the Deep South. And then when the time comes, sometime, next summer, he'll throw his support behind Hillary. And theoretically deliver a couple of key southern states, maybe Virginia and North Carolina. Okay?
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe Georgia. Not likely. Maybe Kentucky.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Right. And he'll be there to counter again. You cannot convince me. Okay, Martin O'Malley is in the race because he's interested in 2020. Someone's told Martin O'Malley that he's presidential material, even though I think he is forever going to be weighed down by the zero-tolerance policing policy that he instituted that came to such grim effect in Baltimore. Jim Webb, maybe he's thinking about 2020 as well. But I can't help thinking that a lot of this is to try to blunt the effect that Bernie Sanders is having, both in terms of numbers and fundraising, and in terms of the philosophical debate that has to happen within the Democratic Party. I don't think Senator Secretary Clinton wants to be dragged left.
No, she's going to come if she comes at all, kicking and screaming, and even if she does, go a little bit over to the left, she will be. I think she'll go back to her corporate roots.
Yeah,
you know?
Sure. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. Would it surprise you? No.
I mean, if it comes down between Hillary and one of the clown car riders, I'd probably have to vote Hillary. I mean, I could vote to, I mean, I've done it to the first of the Green Party or Independent. But that doesn't really do anything. I mean, you know that. I know that. I mean, you feel better when you push it. The other, but I mean, even if it's a Green Party person can get in, once again, if Bernie doesn't pull in some coattails, the president's can't really do anything. I mean, you see what happened to Obama. I mean, not that he's...
And for that matter, where are the progressive Senate and House candidates to ride those coattails, even if he has them?
Yeah.
I mean, we have a larger problem in this country, Jim. And progressives have that problem. We have a hard time fielding candidates. And God knows the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee will not fund a progressive nominee because they don't want it.
Yeah. Well,
by the way, I got a note from Michael in Madison here. He says, let me check. He says, I'm having trouble finding an official final tally for the Bernie rally in Madison. And, of course, there's always a margin of error, but the arena's capacity is 10,231, and I heard on local radio today that they may have gone about 200 plus over that, presumably unintentionally, or at the fire marshal's discretion, perhaps, before they locked the doors and posted at capacity signs. So that tells you a little something.
Yeah, that's good to hear. You hear a little bit. You've been just a wee bit better than Santorum Sanitarium. It was 2 or 3 feet long.
Yeah.
God, Siobhan, he had a good one.
She never takes a day off. Hey, Jim, make sure you send me an email with your mailing address, please.
And
I also need your shirt size and your choice between blue and white.
All right.
Alrighty.
I'll definitely do it. I'll do it today after the show.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Jim. Bye now.
Thank you.
Calling from what I can only presume is Muggy, Louisiana, Stan. That's our buddy Jim. It's about 7 minutes before the hour. A little something just to hit as we go toward the top of the hour to make mention of. I mean, there's clueless and there's clueless. And I don't want to be too hard on this woman. Her life has been pretty turned upside down for a couple of weeks. And I'm talking about Amber Roof, Dylan's big sister. Now, she's the one who did the right thing. When she saw the surveillance video, she called the cops and said, "That's my brother." And apparently, what he did at a time when she was, as we say in the South, fixin' to get married. And, of course, they had to cancel the date, they had to cancel the wedding, everything. But then this. She set up a GoFundMe page to try to raise $5,000. To redo her wedding. She also noted that she would donate 10% of the take to Emmanuel AME Church. But it generated such a negative response that GoFundMe has pulled the campaign. And this is the this is kind of the pull statement on it that that we know money cannot replace the wedding we lost and our perfect day. However, it will help us create new memories and a new start with our new family. The money will pay not only for a rescheduled wedding, but also to send us on our dream honeymoon. That's just sad. You have further evidence of what a jerk her brother is. What a homicidal maniac jerk her brother is. But you know what? And I can't speak for them, of course, and wouldn't dare to. But instead of trying to raise 10% of a $5,000 take or $500 for Emmanuel AME, if she had spoken to the leadership there and said, I want to do this as an act of healing, we had to reschedule our wedding. And I want to hold it right here. And I want to embrace this community, and I hope this community will embrace us. And I want it to be a moment of healing. Don't you reckon that congregation that looked at a judge who has been quite racist in the past and said, we are here to forgive? Don't you think she probably would have gotten her dream honeymoon? Don't you think it would have come back to her pressed down and shaken together? Don't you think it would have been the social event of the Charleston season? Mercy. And maybe when we come back, a little observation about Jim Webb's candidacy. Thank you very kindly to all of you who have contributed this evening. And thanks very much to Doug and Amanda. They just celebrated the birth of a lovely new baby and chipped in to help this evening. Thank you both very much, and all of the Horn Family Commune congregation's fondest wishes for you and the new member of your family. Thank you. So the lines are open. Jump in if you want to continue the conversation. We'll take a little break and come back to it. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. Your wonderful you.
Sister, who's the only one? wedding. It's a nice day to start again. Hey, little sister, who is it you're with? Hey, little sister, what's your spicy wish? Hey, little sister, shotgun, oh yeah. Hey, little sister, who's your Superman? Hey, little sister, shotgun. It's a nice day to start again. It's a nice day for a white wedding. It's a nice day to start again.
Thursday, July 2nd, 2015.
Usually high number of wildfires are burning hundreds of thousands of acres in Alaska.
Alaska and the Pacific Northwest are on fire.
You don't need to be at the beach to believe there's something wrong with the water.
Warming oceans linked to more shark attacks. China and Brazil formally commit to cut their greenhouse gas emissions. Plus, fracking companies can now be sued for causing earthquakes.
Sweet. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Supreme Court justices went the other way today in a big ruling against the Environmental Protection Agency's war on coal.
That's Brett Baer of Fox News. He's the serious, nonpartisan news guy at Fox News, talking about the EPA's war on coal. Sure, I'll buy it. This is your Green News Report.
The majority ruled that the administration's attempt to regulate the industry into oblivion is not worth the cost.
Okay, Desi Doyen, it's just amazing to me that Brett Baer, their straight news guy, talking about the EPA's war on coal and trying to obliterate it out of existence. Just amazing.
Yeah, that's your Fox News fair and balanced for you. Meanwhile, in real news, wildfire season is underway with a vengeance across western North America. In Alaska, low snowpack and all-time heat records have fueled more than 300 out-of-control wildfires, which have already burned 500,000 acres so far this season. Now, a new study confirms wildfire season is getting worse in Alaska. According to lead researcher Allison Kennard of ClimateCentral.com, here in an interview on the Weather Channel, Alaska's wildfire season has expanded as temperatures have gone up due to global warming.
In about the 1990s, there was a sudden increase in the number of large wildfires. And since the 2000s, Alaska's seeing now on average twice as many large wildfires as what they saw in, say, the 1950s.
Huh. I wonder what it is that's going on.
Well, it's also not just Alaska.
Something else that we saw that's really an indication of these really dramatic changes is the increase in wildfires in the Arctic. In the entire 50s and 60s, there was really only 3 large wildfires in the Arctic. Now we're seeing nearly 10 times that. Since 2000, the Arctic has seen 33 large wildfires.
The Arctic is now on fire due to global warming. And Fox News is pretending there is a war on coal. Unbelievable.
And global warming is also being linked to a spate of shark attacks off the North Carolina coast.
Great.
7 attacks in June alone.
Kind of scary now, you know, knowing that this is happening right now. I don't know what's going on and what's bringing them in, but something's causing the sharks to come in close by.
What does global warming have to do with shark attacks?
Well, scientists with the Florida Program for Shark Research say what's causing the sharks to come in is warmer than normal ocean temperatures and saltier water due to dry weather. Perfect conditions for sharks.
You yell shark, we've got a panic on our hands on the 4th of July.
In other news, in Oklahoma, the state Supreme Court has ruled that fracking companies can be sued for causing earthquakes. The court ruled that a lawsuit brought by a woman who was injured in a 2011 Tulsa earthquake can now go forward against 2 fracking companies. State and federal geologists have concluded that the fracking process is behind an epidemic of earthquakes in Oklahoma, which now has more earthquakes than California.
Amazing.
But New York State this week officially banned fracking after a 7-year study on fracking's environmental and health impacts. The New York State Conservation Commission said, quote, fracking poses significant adverse impacts to land, water, air, and natural resources and potential significant public health impacts.
So that's good news.
Yeah, and some more good news. It's been a big week in the United Nations climate treaty negotiations. Brazil, China, and several other countries submitted official pledges to cut their emissions. Brazil pledged to eliminate illegal logging since deforestation is a major contributor to greenhouse gas emissions. And UN officials now say the flood of country commitments now covers 50% of global emissions. We're halfway there to an international climate treaty in December.
That, even though Republicans have spent years telling me that China would never lower its emissions.
China and India, all these countries that are still growing, and they're not going to stop doing what they're doing.
Experts agree that a climate policy that does not include massive energy consumers like China and India is essentially meaningless.
We can't do it alone as one nation.
It's only us doing it. Nobody else is doing this.
I don't think we can control the emissions from China and India, nor do they have any desire to control.
If we have statements such as we do have from the leaders in China and India and other countries saying under no circumstances are they going to accept any kind of mandatory reduction, what are we doing here?
I'm starting to think that they and Fox News might be wrong. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via iTunes, where I hope you'll give us a good review. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We don't get fooled again. Don't get fooled again. No, no.
And 9 minutes past the hour of this, the third hour of the program on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the second day of July 2015. Man, the summer is running right past us. And a reminder, tomorrow evening will be an epic Friday on the front porch. That means we will carry the program on and the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable past the 9 o'clock end time, for the usual 9 o'clock end time for the program, so that if they would like to, the truth seekers can come on over and join in the conversation. Everyone is more than welcome. And just to get out in front of all of this, if you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, then by all means, all you have to do that is send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, and you will be a part of the conversation. Of course, we have that we are in over the halfway point of our challenging week at the Horn, since I'm not going to be on the air next week or very much, if at all, because of Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign work in D.C. We're trying to raise funds, this week's funds and next week's. And it's been a surprising, rousing success. Remember, we have an offer on the table from Jay Cruzen. Anybody contributing more than $100 or more gets, courtesy of Jay Cruzen, a union-made, American-made Bernie 2016 T-shirt, your choice of blue or white, and send the size and the mailing address, and I'll get it to Jay Cruzen. He got the first lot from last night out today, and, well, I don't know how much longer the offer will last, but it's out there right now if you want to participate. Hey, let's run over to the Skype line and talk to Ron up in Canada. Hey, Ron.
Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm dandy. How are you?
I'm not doing too bad. I just wanted to let you know that I made a small contribution to Bernie last night.
Yes, per your offer.
Right, and all of a sudden, I am very popular. I've never been popular before, but I've gotten 11 emails from people today, and not a single one from Hillary.
Well, she just hasn't bought the list yet.
Yeah, I figure my name is done in that category of 1 cent per name, unverified, unpredictable. Anyway, we had an event up here yesterday that probably didn't get much scrutiny south of the border.
You mean Canada Day?
Yes. And in Ottawa, it was like God's urinal. Lots of rain, and it cleared up early in the evening. But even while it was raining, there were 350,000 people milling around downtown and waiting for the fireworks. They put on a standard big musical event that lasts for about 4 hours, followed by just thunderous fireworks for about a half an hour, and airplanes flying over upside down in formation and things like that. But
what, y'all rent the American Air Force?
No, we broke out. The last remaining 8 T-38s were a group called the Snowbirds.
Ah.
And one of the guys, they have 1 2-seater, and the second seat in that one is always reserved for a dignitary of some sort. So they brought back from Ireland the newly appointed Canadian ambassador to Ireland, who was the sergeant at arms when the guy broke into Parliament. And he's the ex-Mountie who had been appointed sergeant at arms, who took down the guy who shot the guy at the War Memorial a few months ago. And he lost 35 pounds in order to fit into the cockpit. That's how important that job was for him. And so that's the kind of event it was. And the only nastiness that occurred was between the usual suspects of the folks that hang around an area of Ottawa called the Market, which is where all the restaurants are and the panhandlers and all that. And one guy who lives on the street got into an argument with another guy who lives on the street. And that's the only news that came out of having 350,000 patriotic people all gathered around in Ottawa.
And even the disagreement was, I'm sure, quite Canadianly polite, right? I mean, there was no gunplay?
There was no gunplay, absolutely not, and both guys are in satisfactory condition in hospital, expected to recover and be discharged in a couple of days. And the other news was a guy named Chris Hadfield, a Canadian astronaut who played Bowie from space. He and his brother issued a song about Canada on YouTube. I sent it to you. And they said they hoped this was something that would inspire everybody to have an okay day.
Were they wearing their space toques?
No. It was very well produced and multi-tracked in the whole bit. But they worked in every Canadian cliche from Canadians using the word A. to poutine, to pancakes, to maple syrup, and being polite, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The video lasted about 5 minutes, and I'm going to find some way to get it to you because it's such a counterpoint to all the patriotic bullshit that goes on the other side of the border. And in my right-wing friends listening down there, stop it. I like it up here.
Yeah, I'm gonna get hell for that line about renting the American Air Force.
We could probably stand to rent part of the U.S. Navy because the last supply ship we had for just was decommissioned because it was no longer seaworthy, and the second one we were down to two a year ago, and then one caught fire off Hawaii last year, and it had to be scrapped. So we're now leasing, looking around to lease supply ships and oilers for the fleet. And the way it sits now in Canada, the BC ferry fleet is three times the size of the Canadian Navy.
Wow. You know, a minute ago when you were talking about the second seat in that T-38, I thought you were going to tell me that they reserved it for Stephen Harper and that there was a tragic accident in which the canopy fell off and his seatbelt failed. But I guess not. See, I'm one of those mean Americans.
I know. And I got to tell you, there's more than a few Canadians who expressed the same opinion to me, politely, of course. But it was, oh, yeah.
Hey, there's a mattress. He might land on a mattress. Move it quick before it gets hurt.
Yeah. No, there's a fairly visceral reaction amongst most Canadians now about Stephen Harper. He's been in that office now for 10 years.
Well, I mean, he's Bush with a plate of poutine, right?
No, he's Bush with an education and some intelligence. And knows exactly how to play the... Well, okay, let me back up a second. In the U.S., you have gerrymandering to sort of guarantee who's going to get elected. In Canada, more and more, I'm seeing very statistically correct parsing of the voter base. And they know, for example, that somewhat less than 40 to 45% of all eligible Canadians are going to vote. Those are going to be divided across the three major parties. We've got the party that's called the Liberals, which would be somewhat to the left of the Democrats in the U.S., the old Democrats. I have no friggin' idea where the current Democrats are. And then to the left of that is a group called the New Democratic Party, which would be very much regarded as Bernie's party up here, except they now want to be in power, so they've gone back to being more of Hillary's party. And the old staunch conservatives, the blue-haired ladies in the church, etc., the right-wingers who love their guns, you do a crime twice, you're going to jail for life. We actually have a crime in Canada that I just heard about today called mischief. And for something aggravated mischief, which if you call in a bomb threat on an airplane, That falls into the category of
criminal, absolutely criminal mischief.
Yeah,
which is probably how we should still be treating it, instead of filling our shorts every time some idiot makes a stupid joke in the line with the TSA.
It can get you life imprisonment up here.
Oh yeah.
Well, I've never heard of that. I said to my wife, "Hey, if I'm going to get thrown in jail for life, I hope to God it's for something that's not as innocuous as mischief."
Well, but that tells you a little bit about Canada now, doesn't it, Ron?
Yeah.
I mean, that's mischief is decidedly impolite.
It is. It's against the public good.
And anyone engaging in it probably needs to be removed from society to a very polite prison somewhere.
Well, there's a phrase that I haven't heard for quite a few years up here, but was always depicted to me as the essence of what it meant to be Canadian as opposed to American. And that in the U.S. it was life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the mantra in Canada is peace, order, and good government.
There you go.
Big difference. Anyway, Harper's thrown all of that right out the window. And he has spent a lot of money, got a lot of brains behind it, and understands that if he can get anywhere from 22 to 25% of a firm base, he can spend enough money on negative ads to bump that up above 33% and end up being in power again. It's a sad state of affairs, but they're very good at what they do, and you know, they're turning us into, I won't say Arizona, but maybe Utah.
I really hate to say that about Canada. I've known about the depredations of the Harper government for quite some time. I remember the horror that attended an email some time back from our dear friend Dr. John, who is a doctor of archaeology, when he wrote to tell me that the Harper government had not only defunded the position of staff archaeologist in a place, you know, Canada, that is in many ways an archaeological wonderland.
Absolutely.
Because it is. But that they had also not simply defunded the library of archaeological data gathered, but that they had also destroyed those libraries.
Yep.
Part of them, maybe they sold off piecemeal, but other parts just went in the damn dumpster. Because all that data was, you know, useless. Who wants to know what happened 15,000 years ago in Manitoba, for God's sakes, really?
Yeah, and our National Archives have been fighting for 10 years to get enough money to adequately fix their leaking roof, which is numerous occasions has, I'm not saying we get Missouri storms here, but we get some semi-decent thunderstorms and downpours occasionally, and the roof keeps flooding, leaking water all over paper documents. We have an entire group of people now that do nothing all day but try to dry out and restore documents going back to the 1700s, before this country was even a country. They have also set it up so that, okay, our government departments are run by groups called, you have a cabinet minister who's responsible for a given department, and then there's a public servant, a career public servant called a deputy minister. And they have been set up so that anything that involves a scientist from any government department speaking to anybody in public, not just the media, but even high school students, their talking points have to be submitted in advance and approved. And there's multiple layers of approval. And more often than not, they never get approval until maybe 2 or 3 months after the event. it's one of those things that the scientists are just quitting and retiring in droves, and they're not recruiting any new scientists. We used to have a good scientific community. The National Research Center up here, Council up here, was just phenomenal. But they were doing basic research. Current government says most of our money is going to go to applied research and development. And since there isn't the infrastructure to support much of that within the National Research Council, their budget keeps getting cut. We can't speak about it. So, kind of depressing, but it's certainly nothing along the lines of what's taking place in the States. I'm glad I live up here sometimes.
Well, as Devin just reminded me, the right wingers also burned the fisheries and climate libraries in Canada. And he tells me they even destroyed an original set of the logs from the HMS Challenger expedition.
Yep.
Yeah, because who needs that, right?
But this is the same government that when they discovered last year the remains of the Franklin expedition, three ships which got lost in the Arctic, Harper was all over. I mean, that got his interest, and so they've got all kinds of money. And they found the remains of what they think was the original ship that Franklin was on. And it got all kinds of press. And it was the expansion of the colonial empire by Great Britain. Yeah, that rings well with conservatives, but we just had the whole residential schools thing, report come out, and that has hit the water and didn't leave a ripple. Seriously.
Well, you have a question coming in from Tim from L.A.
Okay.
Tim says, I know Canada's nothing like the U.S. I know Canadians tend to be much more polite than we are. So, Ron, he says, I'm curious. What do negative political ads sound like in Canada? Hey, that guy's a hoser. He's no good. Vote for me, eh?
Well, okay. I'll give you an example. First of all, political advertising is much more tightly constrained here than it is.
You mean y'all ain't got the freedom?
No. Not yet. Not under the
election. You're just living in that maple syrup flavored poutine, the surrounded totalitarian Canadian maple leaf nightmare of tyranny, right?
God, you have such a way with words, Bob.
I've worked on it for years.
Now, the first of all, before I answer Tim's question, the basic rules are that until recently, parties and could not spend any directly, overtly political ads, money on political ads, until an election writ was dropped. And an election cycle in Canada is roughly 6 weeks. But along the way, we've had the Harper government putting out all kinds of ads announcing the wonderful government programs they have under the Economic Action Plan to Save Canada, building up their points in the polls. Recently, we've had a glimmering of some PACs beginning to show up. And one of those PACs is from a group involved in the Conservative Party who are running ads about a fictitious guy named Trudeau submitting a job application to be prime minister. And they go over it and eventually come down to the points of, he wants to legalize marijuana? Is that the only problem Canada's got? That's his priority? And another guy who says, oh, but he has nice hair. And all the players in the skit are in particular, represent particular groups that the conservatives want to appeal to. We've got the ethnic community, which in this case is Indian. We've got the elderly community, which is an old guy with white hair, looks a little bit like me. And we've got the woman with glasses who just really wants to do the right thing. So, yeah, we have negative ads, but they're tightly regulated. Some of them have backfired. At one point, I guess it was 6 or 8 years ago in an election, the prime minister was named Jean Chrétien, and he had a birth defect that made his lip droop. I forget the name of it at the moment. And the conservatives made fun of that in an ad. Cost them 9 points in the polls. They pulled that ad so quick. Canadians, they hate the negative ads, but if they're really over the top, they will really let the parties know about it. So we're nowhere near as vitriolic as they are in the U.S.
And I mean, so is that one of those George Bush moments where, you know, that's what makes us uniquely American?
Is that American exceptionalism you're talking about?
Well, I guess. I mean, I guess that's you know, you're free to you're free to live in your tyrannical Canadianness up there and not be mean to each other and all polite and stuff because America has protected your southern border against Ruskies and liberals.
Yeah, I've heard that argument. And
yeah, but the problem is, for people who know a little bit of history, Ron, the United States has never done well crossing into Canada.
that's the next place I was going to go. The last time you pissed us off, we burned the White House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, and before that too. I mean, we won a rowboat battle on Lake Champlain and really thought we were something.
Yep.
But no, I mean, if we try to put land, every the two times we have tried to put boots on the ground, Canada has beaten us like borrowed mules and sent us back begging y'all to stop.
Well, all I can say is that every time the economy gets really bad up here, someone will suggest that, damn it, you got to declare war on the U.S. and then surrender the next day and apply for aid.
Yeah, the mouse that, well, that's the concept behind the, that wonderful, it was a play and then a film, I think, with Peter Sellers, The Mouse That Roared.
Yeah.
Hey, in a moment of shallowness, because I know you're going to love this story. I thought of you. Agnes sent it to me because she knew I'd love this story. So, back at the beginning of the First World War, the war to make the world safe for democracy, a Dumfriesshire soldier, one Corporal William Mill of the King's Own Scottish Borderers, got ready to head to Europe. And he took with him, Ron, a bottle of Croft Blend Fine Old Scotch. He survived the war. He never opened the bottle. He didn't open the bottle when he came home from the war. He kept it in a suitcase under his bed at home. And passed on eventually, and that bottle has been passed down through his family. And here recently, the family offered it to Scottish Whiskey Auctions. And the auction began last Friday. And is running for 10 days. He apparently purchased the bottle in 1908. And the bottle has a photograph of Corporal Mill sitting astride a horse. And, I mean, what a story. The only thing that Peter Burns of Scottish Whiskey Auctions in Glasgow can say is that he thinks the whiskey is in good condition despite its age. And he said the bottle was produced between the bottle was produced between 1889 and 1908 as the glass bottle manufacturer Cannington Shaw and Company were using a particular stand format during this period, which is present on the base of the bottle. But apart from that, nothing is known about the bottle or the whiskey inside it. He said it is truly a mystery, and despite casting the net far and wide for answers through archivists, whiskey writers, historical institutions, and other knowledgeable individuals, not one single person has been able to shed any light on it. There's a very high likelihood that this is a one-of-a-kind, and when it appears on our website, it could make for some interesting bidding activity.
What's it up to now?
That I don't know.
Well,
knowing your fondness for amber liquors and my own fondness, therefore, it's like Schrodinger's scotch. You know, would you dare open it?
No. It's only because of the probable disappointment.
Why do you say, well, okay, Croft blend, A, it's blended scotch.
Yeah. And second, it hasn't, undoubtedly it hasn't been kept cool. It's been in the box under a bed. Oh, granted, Scotland hardly ever gets hot, but age probably hasn't done it any favors.
I was always told that liquor stops aging in the bottle.
It does.
In glass. It doesn't age anymore.
It doesn't age, but it can go bad.
Now, this looks to me, I mean, if you consider in any bottle of liquor you buy, you know, there's that little bit of headspace between the top and the beginning of the liquor in the bottle.
Yeah.
This looks like it has lost about, I'd say, an inch and a half, 2 inches of headspace.
Yeah, it's going out through the cork, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's left is probably substantial, but it doesn't necessarily mean it would be good. But it would be a wonderful thing for a museum to buy. Not necessarily a connoisseur of fine whiskey, but that's just the pragmatic hillbilly in me talking. And speaking of which, as an aside, I should note that I have been attempting to fill the gap lately, and I'm almost certainly failed in imbibing for on behalf of not only myself, but you and a couple of other nameless people under conditions of plea agreement. So, I'm holding up my end of the fort, but I can't guarantee how long I can do it. So, I want to get you back in the fold pretty quick, Bob. How's that going?
I'm making progress. I'm still living the life sanitary. Still, and by the way, for anybody out there, I got to share this with you and anybody else. If one has to go on a more or less liquid diet for a while, it can get real boring real fast unless you've got somebody wonderful in your house who will think. And so my repast of choice these past couple of weeks, and this is an unpaid ad placement, unpaid product placement, has been Progresso hearty home-style chicken noodle soup. And I guess it's made hearty because it's got identifiably round hunks of carrot in it.
Well, Progresso makes some decent soups.
Well, yeah, they do, but after a while you can get real tired of them real fast.
Oh, yeah.
Enter Upstage Center Agnes, who, and here's the funny thing. Going through what I was going through, fats were a problem. Anything of much substance was a problem. But, dear God in heaven, I craved acid and I craved heat. And I always love spicy stuff anyway. So, one day, Agnes fixed me my Progresso hearty home-style chicken noodle soup and reached up into the cabinet and pulled down a bottle of Sambal Oelek chili paste. Which is, I mean, chili paste. It's chilies and a little bit of vinegar and salt. You could strip paint with this stuff. But she stirred a spoonful of that stuff into my Progresso hearty home-style chicken noodle soup and then crushed up a little bit of cilantro in it, and it turned into something entirely different immediately.
I'm getting hungry just listening.
It's real good. And if you've got something like maybe some Indian paratha or some naan to sort of fiddle around with in it.
Fresh naan right off the side of the oven?
Oh, devoutly to be wished. And, of course, I'm a big paratha fan, too. Although there's a lot of fun.
Actually, I don't know if you noticed my apology, my sincere apology. Posting my food porn pictures a few days ago.
I did. And no, there was nothing to apologize for. It was lovely.
Well, I had the remainder of the pork tenderloin with some fried eggs and nice brown toast. And it was wonderful. And I just kept thinking, I hope Bob can, you know, enjoy something like this really soon.
Well, I'm slowly working my way back into things. I mean, I've learned a lot of fascinating stuff along the way. I always do with these kinds of things.
Yeah.
This may be my gallbladder, or what I referred to in the past as that little son of a bitch Republican in my gut, because it always acts like everything's about it, and it will make everything else in your body miserable until everybody pays attention to it.
Yeah.
It's a Republican. But... some of the things I've learned, like, for instance, as I moved back into non-clear liquids, my morning every day now is a couple of 4-ounce cups of Greek yogurt. And that seems to be working out very nicely. I'm dropping weight. What else? Oh, when I had my CT scan last Friday, They did it with contrast because they had done it when I wasted a bunch of time and went to the emergency room and came out hurting as bad when I came out as I was when I went in. They did a CT scan. Yay, radiation! And said, no, we want one with contrast. So we got one with contrast. But as a result of the contrast, I was told under no uncertain terms, quit taking your metformin, which is glucophage, which is a fairly benign diabetes medication. It beats the hell out of insulin shots. It has some rather serious side effects, but if you don't have them, you're okay. But they told me to stop taking it for 2 days. And so naturally I went into a paranoid frenzy and, you know, started testing my blood sugar like 6 times a day. It made my fingers really sore. Thank God I'm not a musician. But lo and behold, what I was watching was that all this time, my blood sugar was perfectly fine. It never even acted diabetic. And so we're coming up on 7 days without the stuff, and I get up in the morning, and my blood sugar's like 98. I eat a meal, and it goes to 135.
And then back down.
Yeah.
Well, you know what you're missing, Bob, in your family, is a good devout Christian, because somebody needs to say, it's a miracle.
Somewhere out there, somebody has prayed my diabetes away. Oh, by the way, I looked on the Whiskey Auctions website while we were talking, Ron. The current winning bid is 2,000 pounds.
Holy crap. That's $3,400.
What's interesting is that they say they will not ship it because of deterioration of the foil wrap around the closure. Retrieval of the bottle must be arranged by the buyer.
I mean, I like my whiskey. Spend a lot of time studying what makes good whiskey and try to concentrate just on that because I can't drink nearly as much as I could when I was young and stupid. Or tequila, for that matter, but I know you're an aficionado of tequila, but...
Well, that would be Brother Deacon Asa and I.
But I can't imagine paying $3,000 for a bottle of whiskey. I don't care if it was signed by every one of the Knights Templar. I wouldn't pay that
much. And William the Bruce and William Wallace.
Yeah, I wouldn't pay that much for a bottle of whiskey. Call me cheap, but...
No. You are a connoisseur of reasonably priced liquor.
Yay, verily.
And you know, there's ever so much of it where you're buying a name. I mean, yeah. I've had a glass of the really highfalutin cognac right next to a glass of VS. And maybe there's somewhat of a differentiation in taste, but not $150 worth or $350 worth.
Well, VSOP goes really good with Cubans.
That it does.
Thanks for that. Yeah.
That it does. Yeah. But so too does a really good Añejo Havana Club. And, you know, with the U.S. Opening embassies now between the U.S. And Cuba, I'm getting closer and closer to thinking I may be able to get that bottle of Havana Club yet.
Yeah.
I will never forget smoking a Cuban cigar, well, sitting in Germany in an outdoor plaza, the outdoor cafe, smoking a Cuban cigar and drinking a glass of Añejo Havana Club rum. Oh, my dog.
It's good rum. I will agree with you.
Well, you can get it. I can't.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, Bob. But I guess living in a land that's not filled with freedom and democracy is just one of the burdens we have to bear.
Well, you know, you're not exceptional like we are. It takes a lot of exceptionalism to not be able to drink Cuban rum or smoke Cuban cigars.
Yeah.
Oh, and now you've got me browsing around this auction site. Okay, you wouldn't drop that kind of money on a bottle of dubious scotch from somewhere between 1889 and 1908. But how about a bottle of 1951 Macallan from the fine and rare series?
That might be tempting, but it'll probably go for over $10,000.
£6,000, actually.
Okay.
48.8% alcohol by volume.
What little bit of scotch I got in me must have popped up, and I wanted to go cheap.
Well, right. Yeah, it does. It does kind of violate the whole idea of Scotsness, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. But you have to remember that Scots invented whiskey, one, for themselves, and two, to sell to the English at inflated prices.
Well, exactly. And then there's the Royal Bracla, 1924.
What, 25?
It's gone for £4,000.
That's a deal.
Hell, buy two, write a check.
Go broke saving money.
That's good.
In any event, I'm going to leave you now and let you go. Encourage the congregation to continue supporting you.
Indeed. We are ever so close to finishing this week in good form, and I'm thrilled. And it's going to make DC a hell of a lot easier to work without sweating a bunch of stuff back here.
And I didn't mean to use up quite so much bandwidth doing our Jerry Seinfeld invitation, talking about nothing, but it's always great to talk to you.
Oh, it's a delight. It is always a delight, Ron, and I'm glad to complain not about the bandwidth or the topicality. I think we talked about some things even though you think it was nothing. I mean, we worked in the pillaging of the cultural treasures of Canada, for God's sakes. Tell me what American radio program has managed that this evening or any other evening in the recent past.
Not the recent past for sure. But just remember the image of the last time we got pissed off, we burned the White House. That one.
And up until then, it had a nice paint job on it, I'll have you know.
Yeah.
We were so damn broke after y'all burned it that all we could afford was to whitewash it.
Yeah, but see, we burnt the port of Baltimore, too, so you couldn't bring in materials. But I digress. I will leave you, and we'll go back to patriotism on another night.
Hear, hear. Take care.
Sir. Bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Ron calling from Canada. Now, what in the world's going on here? I got Sparky and Tracy.
Oh, wow.
Hey, Tracy.
Yes. Hey, Bob. How the heck are you?
Well, I'm okay. How the heck are you? Long time no talk.
Well, let's see. Besides the fact that white people have lost their ever-loving mind, I'm okay. But that's
yeah, what's account. Yeah, what's new?
What's new? I mean, besides the Duggars and what's his name's sister, because she's upset her, you know, because
dream,
her brother
dream,
killed
dream wedding. Dream wedding. Yes, dream wedding.
She's upset, you know, but she's going to give 10% to the church.
Well, that's been pulled.
Well, good.
GoFundMe got rid of that lickety split.
Mm-hmm. But a quickness. Bob, thank God for gay marriage. You know, hey, hip hip hooray on that one. But then I saw, you know, what they snuck. It's kind of like what they did when they got rid of Prop 8 and all that stuff, you know, a couple of years back, and then gutted the Civil Rights Act. You know, we get all excited about the good things, and then they just go back to true to form.
Well, I think there is a very valid observation to be made here. You know, I had a conversation with Ian Masters the other night that we simulcast on the Horn and on KPFK, and what he pointed out, and I think it's a very valid point, is that on social issues where corporations have moved, have already moved toward acceptance, things like marriage equality, you know, corporate America likes marriage equality, so the Supreme Court came down on the side of marriage equality.
Makes sense.
But on issues that relate to real substantive civil rights, no. Roberts, you know, the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, Scalia, and Kennedy are going to be right there to try to roll all that back because, you know, America doesn't have racism anymore, Tracy, and everything's good. Everything's good. So we don't need the Voting Rights Act. We don't need the Civil Rights Act. We don't need to keep money out of politics. Everything's good.
Well, you know, I was a friend of mine posted something on her Facebook page about the Dukes of Hazzard and how they
took the General off. Lee.
Uh-huh. And so, you know, somebody wrote back, had the nerve to write back, well, you know, black people weren't the only ones enslaved because they, you know, they brought up the Irish.
Well.
Hello, Bob.
Yeah.
So me being me, you know, I stared at the post for a very long time. Because, you know, when I do say stuff in rebuttal to other people, I have to, you know, because I don't really feel like going to doing the back and forth bullshit. And so I had to think long and hard, and I'm like, oh, fuck this. No, I'm not going to let this one go. And me being who I am, I wrote, you know, as I do know, because I do study history, and I do know that at one point the Irish were treated as badly as blacks, and they did come here knowing, you know, the treachery and the brutality of slavery and all that and peonage because of how they were treated by the English. As a matter of fact, when they came here, for the most part, they were abolitionists because they knew. And they're like, this is crazy. You know, we're leaving all this in England and all this. But then they started forming coalitions and stuff with the abolitionists and the blacks. And the money folks said, oh, no, we can't have this. So what do? They gave them the vote. And all of a sudden they became white. Now, they became white, but they didn't become white money landowners, but they became white. And I said, you know, the difference between black folks and white folks, when the Irish became citizens, they didn't get their citizenship.
No, in fact, in places like Boston and New York, they banded together in social solidarity and cultural solidarity, and that's how you wound up with transgenerational membership in the police force, or the Irish Catholic political sway that in Massachusetts. Well, that was never an opportunity. That was never something that was possible for black folks.
And I'm like, so I would love. I said, well, you know, and I feel bad for the Irish ancestors. I said, but here's the deal. For those Irish ancestors, I mean, the woman talked about how people have forgotten about how badly the Irish were treated. I said, as were the Jews, as were the Italians, and as was everybody else when they first got here. But we're the only ones.
You're Jews, you're Italians, you're Irish. They started out not white.
Not white, exactly.
But they could get white. But y'all can't ever do anything.
I can't get white.
No. I mean, Michael Jackson tried.
He tried very hard. He tried very hard. And even still, when something went down, because, you know, people said that he was the little white kid, and he was reminded very quickly that he was black, as was O.J. Simpson when Nicole Brown Simpson turned up dead. You get reminded. You may try to do everything you have to do to not be considered black, but do something wrong. And you are quickly reminded just how black you are.
Well, and let's remember lest our statements be a little too blankety.
Yeah, let's not get blankety. In general, you know, no generalization.
It is the Christian evangelical fundamentalist white wing that is a problem in this country.
Yes.
If liberals and progressives make mistakes relative to ethnicity, I tend to think that they make it more unintentionally. I won't say innocently because I don't think anybody's innocent here.
No. Well, then we have somebody pointed out about how Bristol Palin's about to drop another kid, and is she married yet?
No, and she cashed every one of them abstinence checks, too.
Mm-hmm. And look, I have no issues with, you know, single parents. I was a single parent. I typically, well, not anymore because I'm married. And Jad is actually going to adopt my son who was grown, but there you go. But the fact of the matter is I have no problems against anybody that has a child without benefit of clergy.
Well, the fact of the matter is, bastardy as a legal concept was wiped out, taken off the books a long time ago.
But let's see what would happen if Sasha or Malia.
Well, I mean, they've been listening to that Beyonce music, and we all know that that's...
That Beyonce girl now with that Jay-Z fella.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What sickens me, I guess, is the double standard, because they can do and say whatever they want to say and do, and there's no consequences. There's just, we're having an issue right now at my church, and there was, I wouldn't say a misappropriation of funds or anything like that, but what's happening is there was a mistake made that shouldn't have been made, but it was a very large amount of money. Now,
big mistake.
Like, basically, could have funded the horn for what is your expenses about a month?
We try to raise about $4,000 a month.
Okay, with private about a year of funding for the horn. Okay. So, yes, a significant amount of money. Now, the person in charge is a white guy. And he's apologized and he's cried and I'm so sorry and blah, blah, blah. But yet he hasn't stepped down. Now, remember what was happening with my life for $4,000.
Yeah, it got wrecked.
Right. Now, had it been a brother or me in the same situation?
Call the police.
Call the police. And see, these are those things that make me.
Although, in this particular circumstance, you'd like to hope that it didn't happen.
Yeah, no, it would have, because of the way they've handled other stuff and other people. But again, like you said, I've been trying to be the voice of reason. But the more I try to be the more voice of reason, the more I get annoyed with the fact that there's a certain group of people, and I call them privileged, because, see, you know what trouble is, and you know what the struggle is and stuff like that. And when things get tough, you don't go crying and, oh my, you know, do the hand wringing and the clutching of the right. pearls.
Hey, Tracy, I hate to do this, but I gotta get out
here.
We're a minute past. So hopefully maybe you'll be with us on Friday on the front porch tomorrow. It's gonna be epic.
Oh, that's right, today. You know what?
We're gonna go 5-6 hours tomorrow night. So if you're there in the group, it'll be awesome.
I'm thinking today is Friday because today is it's almost like a Friday because there's so much goddamn traffic. So now I feel better.
All right.
I feel better.
We'll talk to you soon, Tracy.
We'll talk soon, my love.
Bye now. Calling from Southern California, the lady cab driver, Tracy. And, hey, I got to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. We did it again. We got one more night of our challenging week to go. And thank you, Chris, in Germany, for getting this all started with your challenge this evening. Thanks, everybody. Have a great night. Bye now.